Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with David Bibb, Acting Administrator at the U.S. General Services Administration. Also joining us in our conversation is Marty Wagner, Senior Fellow at the IBM Center for the Business of Government. David, as we begin to gear up for an administration transition here in a couple months, GSA plays an integral role in making this transition as smooth and as seamless as possible. Perhaps you could give us a brief historical perspective on what led GSA to have such a critical role during these transitions, and how has that authority evolved over the years?
We have, by statute, the 1963 Presidential Transition Act, certain duties that no other agency has. That act was put into law in recognition that the Congress needed to codify this time when we would be changing governments. And it basically says that GSA will provide all the space, all the telecommunications, all the furniture, all the payroll services, all the travel services for the incoming administration. And that begins on the day after the election and continues through January 20th with a little wind down period after that. So there's a little piece of trivia. Who is the only person named by law as being responsible for calling the winner of the presidential election prior to the convening of the Electoral College? And, of course, the answer is the Administrator of General Services. It actually says in the law that the administrator will determine the apparent winner. And then the reason for that is so we can begin providing these services to the transition team. We hold the keys until a clear winner is apparent, and then we turn over what will be 120,000 square feet of space for 600 people who will go about the duty of forming the new government. We've gotten a lot more sophisticated about how we do that. We have a very good 40-person team that will be going 24/7 beginning about 3 months from now. We began preparing for this 6 months after the last election. We're in great shape. The transition team could move in tomorrow if they needed to. But on another front, there's really nobody, when you look at transition, nobody in the federal government is responsible for telling the executive branch how to transition. And we're finding that because we had this other role in transition, many agencies are calling upon us to kind of share best practices about what do you do, how do you treat the outgoing political appointees, what kind of counseling do you give them, how do you go about preparing briefing materials for the incoming transition team and for the presidential appointees who are going to be nominated. And there are some agencies that have had enough turnover that they don't know what they're supposed to do. So our Chief Human Capital Officer, Gail Lovelace, and I have found ourselves on a traveling roadshow. We've probably spoken at least a dozen times over the last 2 or 3 months to other agencies and other interest groups who are just interested and want to know, how are you doing it over there at GSA? Because you seem to know what you're doing. So that's kind of an informal role that's developed, but it's actually the thirst for information about what to do and how to do it during transition is pretty amazing.
David, I'd like to maybe follow up on the specific activities that GSA does and maybe work through, if you could even maybe work out specific stories to illustrate the points that you've made, and perhaps some of the best practices that you found work best in this situation.
Well, on the duty I mentioned of providing all the facilities for the incoming administration, the best lesson we've learned about that is to start early. If you start looking for office space in Washington, D.C. with 6 months left to go before the election, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. So that was one thing that we learned to do. In transition in general, I will say there, whether it's GSA's special duties or we're talking about dealing with the what we call the parachute teams from the transition group that actually drop into the agencies to learn about what the agencies do and how they go about functioning and what their issues are. But a couple of universal principles apply to both of those. One is to be prepared. We are certainly prepared on the provision of facilities, et cetera, side. We have already begun work on our briefing materials for the incoming administration and our issue papers, things that we want to lay before the incoming group. Another lesson learned is that the first impression is absolutely critical. That is one thing that we're ever mindful of with our folks we put on the transition support team, the 40 people I mentioned who work around the clock to support the transition activities. We put our very best people on that because not only are they representing GSA, but for many people who are forming the new government and will, in fact, work in the new government, this is their first exposure to federal employees. So we're very mindful that on behalf of the entire federal government, we need to be sharp and do a sharp job. But that also applies back to any agency when the transition team comes in. You got to know what you're talking about. You can't be halfway prepared or wander around in philosophical discussions. I think it's just important that people see professional people who know what they're talking about, have the issues nailed, and you only get one chance to make that first impression. So that's critical. I think it's critical and important to make it clear to the incoming folks who we work for. We work for them. And most federal employees know that very clearly, that we work for the President of the United States, we're part of the executive branch, and we're here to help you succeed with your agenda. Now, we may have some issues that we think you ought to consider, but we want to convey that understanding up front that we're not here to oppose you, fight you, carry our own hidden agenda forward. We're here to be part of your team because you're going to need us and we're going to need you. And then I think the last lesson is don't be afraid to advance ideas. I think the incoming groups will have ideas of their own, certainly, but they're not going to have all the ideas that they'll like to pursue. So I think they're grateful to get the full spectrum of things as we see them. That's been my experience anyhow.
Well, moving beyond the transition and to your biggest customer, the Department of Defense, the amount they've been spending on services has been steadily increasing over the past decade, and DOD is taking steps to improve how it buys those services. To that end, what is GSA doing to influence DOD's use of non-DOD contracts, and what steps are you taking to foster GSA's working relationship with the Defense Department?
As Marty, I think you know, I've been, and I mentioned earlier, I've been chairing for a couple of years now a GSA-DOD working group, which is an internal working group that meets biweekly, with our sole function being to figure out how to be a better provider for our biggest customer. What we actually do coming out of those meetings covers a broad front. After I mentioned earlier that both the DOD IG and the GSA IG looked at our assisted acquisition program under the provisions of the Defense Authorization Act a couple of years back, out of their audits came some 20 action items that they felt like needed to be done. We sat down, formed a team to sit down with DOD, and went through, fleshed those out in almost a to-do list of things to get done. And we have religiously worked that with DOD. Even when it's gotten hectic at DOD and sometimes they didn't have time, we'd be pounding on the door saying, it's time to sit down and talk about the MOA. And then we've reported back to the Congress every month or every 2 months with a summary quarterly of what we've done against that memorandum of agreement to make sure that we're both contracting correctly. Beyond that, we talk about pursuing business opportunities with DOD on every front. At our meetings, we will talk about, now the Commissioner of the Federal Acquisition Service is going to meet with the following people on the following schedule. Have you talked with Army recently? When are you going to talk with Air Force? All the way down to what kind of visits are our customer service representatives in the field making? And the whole idea, also things have changed with DOD, within DOD some. In the past, if a program officer or a base commander wanted something, he would just tell GSA he needs it. DOD has instilled more control within their program so that they're asking their contracting officers to sign off before DOD comes to GSA for services. That means our people have had to, in addition to have a relationship with the base commander, they've also had to establish a relationship with the contracting shops in DOD, because you need both of them to want to do business with you before the business will come your way. So our discussions are fairly wide-ranging. Those are a couple of examples of the things we do.
David, there's been a fair amount of discussion and activity around a government-wide standard for secure and reliable forms of identification for both federal employees and contractors. Could you elaborate on the Homeland Security Presidential Directive 12, commonly known as HSPD 12? Just real quickly, what are some of the key requirements of this directive, and can you tell us about the services that your organization is offering in this area to agencies?
It was a concern of the president that we all have across the government identical and interoperable identity cards as government employees or as government contractors. There must have been 100 different systems before this presidential directive came out. The directive came out, and GSA had a strong role in setting the standards for what that identity card would look like. And that identity card is used both for admittance to federal properties and for logging into your computer system. The idea is to make it a kind of one-stop identity card. It is strongly resistant to tampering, counterfeiting, has all kinds of built-in security features. You've got the photo, your photo, fingerprint ID electronically embedded on the card so that it's very hard to misuse it. So GSA, in addition to playing a strong role in developing the standards for that card, which are now standard across the government, also is operating what we call a managed service office. In effect, it is a business under the Federal Acquisition Service to provide credentials to some 800,000 federal employees and contractors. Now, DOD is running its own system, but we have put in place 200 enrollment centers. So far, it's not going as fast as I would like. We have something in the neighborhood of 100,000 employees and contractors, what we call sponsored. That is, minimal information is available to get the process rolling, and that's increasing at about 5,000 a week. But we need to issue 800,000 of these things. At the rate we're going, we'll hit about 250 or 300,000 by the end of the year. And we need to do a larger volume than that in order to, we have assumed certain volumes of business in order to give a very inexpensive rate for each card. And we're not coming up to those business volumes. So we're working with the Office of Management and Budget, get a little fire lit on some agencies that aren't moving as fast as we'd like to see them move. It's a great thing, though. When it's in place, there'll be background checks done before you can get your card, whether you're an employee or a contractor, and it will just eliminate a lot of very bulky, non-interoperable systems that we have now and replace it with a state-of-the-art tool.
What does the future hold for the U.S. General Services Administration? We will ask David Bibb, Acting Administrator at the U.S. General Services Administration, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.